Hey y'all, I am so excited today. If you have not seen, we have a new name change. So this is no longer Uplift Fit Nutrition Radio. This is now Root Cause Radio with my girl Anya Rosen and of course myself, Lacey Dunn. So we are both very, very, very excited to be doing this together to help spread information, knowledge, and get you guys feeling like your very best selves, from stressed out pigeons to flying banshees. That's the goal. If anybody has an Avatar reference, Anya, welcome.
Thank you. I'm so excited about this.
I know, right? We've known each other for quite some time, especially through like the ups and downs of our own health journeys. So I'm very much stoked to have a very smart, genius fellow dietitian, functional medicine dietitian on my podcast as my co-host for good.
Yes. And wow, we seriously have been through it all together over the past few years. And I'm so happy that we're now on the other side of it.
I know, right? Well, Anya, yeah. My listeners really don't know who you are, minus the one episode that you've done with me. Tell my listeners who you are.
Yeah. So I'm a registered dietitian. I also specialize in functional medicine. So I work mostly with people who are dealing with hormonal imbalances and gut issues, but also a range of other symptoms, like autoimmunity, skin issues, energy troubles, fertility difficulties. So I also, similar to you, Lacey, take a root cause approach. I use advanced functional testing with my clients to help identify reasons why they might be feeling the way that they're feeling that might be overlooked by conventional medicine. And then I use an integrative approach from there, combining my conventional training with my knowledge of alternative medicine to help them heal in a more sustainable, safe, effective way.
Heck to the yeah. So we're all about finding the root cause or root causes of somebody's dysfunction, disease, or symptoms, and figuring out how can we get to the root cause, uproot it, and get them to be no longer symptomatic and feeling like their very best self. That's the whole goal of root cause medicine. If people don't know, it's addressing the root causes, not just band-aiding. For example, if somebody has hormonal dysregulation, it's not just throwing, okay, birth control at it, because let's be real, birth control suppresses your own hormone production. Now, we could do a whole podcast all about the side effects of birth control, you know, the nuances in regards to where it might be beneficial or, you know, not the good move, but that would be a band-aid to our hormonal balance. So that's just an example. And as we go through this podcast, we're going to have so many topics to where we're going to truly dive into different root causes, different symptoms, different struggles, different cases, even to really help you guys understand how can you, one, how can you make sure that you are the boss of your own body and healing, but two, give you hope and encouragement also in your healing journey.
Absolutely. And also, I think the birth control topic is a great one for the future. And if any of you have ideas or topics that you want us to discuss, please, please let us know. We're excited to give you that knowledge that you're craving.
Yeah, just slide into our DMs, be like, yeah, can we please go over this? So my Instagram is going to be at Faith and Fit. And then Anya, yours would be?
AnyaRosen.rd.
Love it. Cool. Okay, well, podcast number one, we are talking about essentially why your gut is not healing. So as you guys know, there's a lot of things that can happen with your gut: gas, bloating, distension, diarrhea, constipation, pain. So this topic is not necessarily going to say SIBO, candida, parasites, yeast. We're not going to say the essentially like why, but we're going to go into the overall topic of why your gut is not healing. The main things to address in question.
Perfect.
So, Anya, I'll let you start. Let's dive into why your gut is not healing.
Yeah. So I think the first one that comes to mind is that you haven't done accurate or comprehensive testing. Mm-hmm. So I see this all the time. People are just kind of guessing and checking with what is potentially going on. So they're, you know, maybe read something online or heard something from a podcast or from their doctor without really doing comprehensive stool testing, breath testing, blood testing, and just are making an assumption of what's going on and then treating it empirically or just based off of their own knowledge. And there's so many problems with that. First of all, we need to understand what are the imbalances or dysfunctions or overgrowth issues at play in order to customize your treatment and your approach. It's really, really hard to just play guess and check, and it's going to just cost you more time, more money, more energy, and maybe more problems down the road.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Testing. I like to say test, don't guess. Now, in regards to testing, my preference would be, depending on the person, I always like to do a GMAP if at all possible. If we suspect there is something like SIBO, then doing a SIBO breath test. But Anya, what are your favorite methods of testing when it comes down to just getting started with root cause approach with gut issues?
Yeah, so I too love the GI map for a stool test, but you know, every test, even the best of the best tests like the GI map, has to be taken into account with your entire clinical picture. So I think the very first step is doing a comprehensive assessment with a professional. So really having someone walk through all of the details of your symptoms and your signs and already starting to think about what could potentially be at play. You know, for example, if your practitioner isn't asking you, if you're just telling your practitioner that you're bloated and they're not asking you, okay, when do you get bloated? Do you get bloated immediately after eating? Do you get bloated 2 hours after eating? Do you get bloated increasingly throughout the day? Do you wake up bloated? Does your bloating last feel stagnant and last for days or even weeks? If they're not asking these sort of questions, then the test results on their own aren't always going to be the most effective, because there are some potential reasons why your testing can be a little bit off. So first step is that comprehensive assessment with a skilled and experienced practitioner. Then from there, I do love this GI map for stool testing. I think it's really great. In some cases, I like to combine it with a SIBO breath test, but the problem with that is A, it's a very difficult and timely test to conduct, and B, you know, with SIBO, or if that is the case, treating it, if we're not addressing other potential imbalances, such as those that are happening in the larger intestine, you're going to be more likely to relapse anyway. So we almost always want to include some sort of stool testing.
I'm so glad that you mentioned that, the fact that like the questions. So when it comes down to even before doing any testing at all, the question should be, okay, what does your diet look like? What are you consuming? How are you consuming mm-hmm. things? How are you eating? Is there stress involved? Are you, you know, maybe self-sabotaging yourself by eating a lot of high veggie volume that's going to make you gassy and bloated regardless? What about artificial sweeteners, alcohol? So we always like to focus too, like it's not just, okay, let's just do a test because we can, right? We want to save you money. We want to get to the potential root causes, but we also want to figure out what are the potential lifestyle and diet modifications that we can make too prior to doing any expensive testing to get you feeling better. And that's a huge one of the, like, the reasons why someone might not be getting better and healing their gut is they're not changing their diet, and then they're stressed out as heck. Stress is such a sabotage to your gut because of that huge gut-brain connection. It's going to downregulate your stomach acid, your pancreatic enzymes, your bile release. It's going to downregulate the motility, potentially making you constipated. It can cause visceral hypersensitivity, in which you might just have what I call the stress gut. So if nobody mm-hmm. has actually had that before, I get it when I'm stressed and it's like, what? Do I have SIBO all of a sudden? It's like, no, you're just stressed as heck. Just relax. Give it a few days. You're going to mm-hmm. be fine. But so glad that you mentioned that, because a lot of people, they just jump into, oh my God, let me do testing, but they don't address their diet or their lifestyle factors either.
That's so important. I mean, yeah, if you're not looking at that lowest hanging fruit first, you're wasting your money most likely. I've had so many clients that have really, really, they've come to me really wanting stool testing, really pushing for it. I don't order tests until I do that initial consult for that exact reason, because sometimes I'll see like, oh, you're complaining about being constipated, but you wake up and the moment from when you wake up, you're immediately out the door. Right. And the stress of your workday already is beginning. You're not giving yourself time in the morning to even use the bathroom. We need to start with that. And then if we already are implementing these sort of things and we've already got your diet and fiber intake and lifestyle optimized, and then you're still having symptoms, then we want to do more testing. And then there's, you know, aside from stool testing, like I mentioned, with something like constipation, for example, we're looking also, we need to do some blood testing as well, you know, with constipation, thyroid function is huge. And hypothyroidism is often missed in conventional medicine because really they're usually just talking TSH, maybe T4. But there are so many other sort of points along the line of thyroid function that can go haywire. And that can cause, you know, everything to slow down, especially gut motility, leading to constipation and bloating.
You nailed it there for sure. And the thing that also needs to be, there are so many like underlying factors to why somebody could have a gut issues. It's not always, I know like people want to jump into like stool-based testing. It's not always that you have a pathogen. And in a second, I want us to talk about the, how testing can go wrong and what can you miss. But in regards to like the other underlying factors of why somebody might not be having optimal digestion, you also have to consider the thyroid, your sex hormones, your stress hormones. You have to consider maybe there might be some gastroparesis, cough, cough, Ozempic, or, you know, if there's any shape or form of trauma in the body, any visceral adhesions, especially if there's a lot of bloating, gas, constipation type of issue. So there's a lot of course, other things we could talk about, mold, heavy metals, toxins, but like, it's not always just stool test is going to give you the answers. I know some people will do a stool test and they're like, oh, it's clean. Well, why am I still having gut issues? Am I just hopeless? And it's like, no, you didn't find the potential other root causes of your issues. Like pelvic floor dysfunction would be another example.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you know, on the topic of things that can go wrong with testing, a huge mistake that I see more and more people make is kind of neglecting that test, that proper test prep, right? So now what I do with all of my stool testing is I have my patients take a biofilm disruptor. So for those who don't know, biofilm is basically the sticky substance that lines your gut lining, and pathogens can hide in it, especially parasites or candida. And oftentimes, you know, if we do a GI map or a stool test, we don't see these pathogens come up, but people are still symptomatic. Mm-hmm. And then let's say we do some sort of herbal protocol, something that kind of jumbles everything up and breaks down the biofilm, and then we retest. They're like, wow, suddenly I have all these things popping up. Well, you had them all along. They were just hiding in biofilm. So that's kind of another sort of often overlooked mistake that I think that people do make with stool testing is, you know, if you can, to take a biofilm disruptor for 7 to 10 days before you test, it's going to increase the accuracy of your results.
100%. And I know, even so, even if you take a biofilm disruptor, sometimes you're not going to see everything in your gut either. Candida and parasites, those are the top two things that candida would be yeast that I don't always see show up on a GI map or show up on a GIFX or stool-based testing, because that biofilm can be so hard to break through. And parasite testing is extremely limited. If you look at any single GI test, there's maybe like 5 up to 10 parasites that are checked, right? The thousands of parasites that can be present in this world that are not on that list is huge. So that's another thing, is don't just have your practitioner treat you based on what that test is and what those results are. They should be treating you based on your history, your symptoms, your struggles, and the overall clinical picture.
Absolutely. So for example, sometimes like if I'm suspecting that someone has candida, we did a stool test, it didn't come up. Maybe I want to follow up with an O test and look at other, which is an organic acids test, and look at other yeast and fungal markers and see if those are indicating any potential candida or other fungal infection. And if I'm suspecting something like parasites, and again, they're not really coming up on a stool test, I'm looking at their blood work, which I run for all my patients regardless. And I'm looking at things like, you know, their iron panel. Right? Are they having random unexplained nutrient deficiencies despite a robust diet? That can also be a good clue that, yeah, there actually might be a parasite there.
Yep. And we could dive. I think we 100% have to do a parasite episode again. We need to talk about the blood work markers, the symptoms, all that type of stuff, and the struggles, the things that can manifest because of parasites. But yes, key thing, you guys, test, don't guess, but don't rely on testing to be the single source of what you're treating. And then we talked a little bit about diet, lifestyle. Let's talk next about what are the things that people mess up when it comes down to a treatment approach. So say that you find SIBO or candida or parasites or yeast, whatever you find, what are the things that can hold people back from healing?
Yeah, I mean, simply put, just being on a supplement protocol that's not optimized for you. Right. So being put on some sort of generic protocol that isn't really customized to your body, your test results, your needs, your lifestyle. And like kind of intertwined with that, something that I see a lot is underdosing. really, really underdosing, like just taking small amounts of herbals, maybe at random, not really taking adequate amounts or the right herbals or, you know, antimicrobial supplements that are targeted for you. That's not really going to get you results. You know, unfortunately, usually to treat things naturally, it does require a good amount of supplements for, you know, about 6 to 8 weeks. So if you're on a protocol and you're only taking like, you know, just a small amount of one thing, it's probably not going to be enough for you. And when you're taking herbal supplements, even if they're natural, they're very powerful, right? That's why you need them to be supervised by someone who knows what they're doing and can monitor this and guide you so that it's safe for you.
The key thing that I see is people, they will not follow the entire regimen too when they start to feel a little bit better. And they'll hop and bop from different providers and not give the provider either an opportunity to change the antimicrobial approach as well. The key thing is, one, you cannot be on a aggressive enough protocol. Two, you could have resistant microbes in which you might need to switch different antimicrobials in order to kill it off, right? Parasites, bacteria, they can be very, very resistant sometimes to different herbals. And sometimes what happens, and I find this in the case with people that come to me too, is that people, they don't feel better and they give it 2 weeks and they jump ship and they go to a different provider. So did that provider potentially not give you an aggressive enough treatment? Maybe. Did you not wait enough, long enough to actually see success? Maybe. Or did you need a different type of treatment? When it comes down to the selective herbs that work for each person, you have to find your Cinderella shoe of healing. So yes, it might not be an aggressive enough protocol, but also you might just need an entire different protocol and different herbs. For example, oil of oregano and mastica gum and garlic, those don't always get rid of H. pylori. Those are top three herbs to get rid of H. pylori, but it might not be for somebody who has a very resistant case of H. pylori. They might need a different herb. They might need a different biofilm disrupting agent. So I highly suggest never jump ship. Always work with your practitioner and don't be afraid to be like, hey, do we need to be a bit more aggressive? Is this where I should be at this period of time? It's been 6 weeks. Am I where I should be at 6 weeks? It's been 2 weeks. Am I where I should be at 2 weeks? A good practitioner will say, it's been 2 weeks. Calm down. Give it time. Be patient. Right?
Absolutely. I usually say like, let's set the expectation that like we'll check in at 4 weeks. And that's usually when I start to see things kind of begin to move the needle for certain people. On the flip side though, I've had the opposite issue with clients that believe that part of treatment means feeling absolutely horrible. And I think a huge part of my work with clients is educating them on die-off, what it is, what's normal, what to expect, and when to know that, you know, when something is a red flag and that we need to maybe taper it down, maybe switch you to something else, maybe work on, you know, your other detox pathways beforehand. And for those who don't know, die-off is basically a term used to describe the symptoms that occur when you are killing pathogens in your body or like any sort of toxic substance, and they start to die and release those toxins into the bloodstream. And that can cause things like fatigue, headaches, nausea. It can cause some like mild or should be mild GI upset. But that's usually an acne sometimes, but this is usually temporary, usually only lasts or should only last a few days. And there are also things that we could do to help, you know, mitigate the die-off symptoms too, such as giving binders and making sure, of course, always going back to the diet, is the diet adequate in fiber? Mm-hmm. Is the diet adequate in hydration? Are you moving your lymph? Things like that.
Yeah, I'm so glad you mentioned that. I know I have sometimes clients that be like, well, you mentioned die-off and I don't feel it. What's wrong? Is it not working? And I'm like, no, we just optimized your detox, drainage, lymphatic pathways in the right way and you feel fine. That's good. That's not bad.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I tell people that all the time when, because people also are like, why? I don't feel bad. I feel actually good. And I'm like, that's kind of how you should feel, honestly. That's the goal.
The goal does not always happen, but is a big goal for sure. Okay. We'll talk another topic. Definitely will be mitigating die off for sure. We already talked about stress, but a big key factor of what holds anybody back from healing anything at all, whether it's adrenals, stress, gut, detox, mold, you name it, is stress management. So let's talk about the key things that people forget when it comes down to mitigating stress and healing their bodies.
Yeah, I mean, this is such a difficult topic, I think, and such a difficult thing to counsel in. I always kind of say this. I'm like, listen, a life without stress is like, it's pretty boring.
Yep.
you know, if you're going to lead a life that's exciting and challenges you and is fulfilling, there's going to be stress and then it's going to fluctuate throughout your life, right? So we need to think about A, your stress resilience, and B, your entire stress bucket, right? So I think that you've used this analogy before, but we think of, you have this big bucket and all stressors are going into it, right? Psychological stressors, personal stressors, work stressors, physical stressors, and it can only fit so much, right? So when you have a lot of stress coming from various sources, then, you know, then you become less resilient to any additional stressors. For example, let's say that you work a lot and you don't sleep much. Then maybe the stress of like drinking alcohol, having 4 to 6 drinks a week, sets you over the edge and, you know, causes a lot of oxidative stress and causes inflammation and whatnot. Whereas someone who has a more relaxed life is sleeping, you know, 8-ish hours a night, is able to tolerate that amount of alcohol without some of those negative effects, right? So we're thinking about everything, that's all the possible stress sources, and thinking about, is your bucket overflowing? Where can we possibly control the stress and reduce it without negatively impacting other areas of your life?
Right. And it's so hard because stress can be internal, external, psychological, physiological. Mm-hmm. So stress, people can even say, hey, I'm not stressed, but they might be, like for me, they might talk really fast and that's stressful to the body. They might mm-hmm. be, the easy things would be like skipping meals, right? Not having balanced mm-hmm. blood sugar, not sleeping, overtraining. But there are mm-hmm. also other underlying stressors, like not checking in with yourself, not processing your own thoughts and emotions, watching stressful TV shows or movies, not processing your trauma, or having toxic people in your life. So there's so many things. And so the key thing I like to tell my clients is, whenever you are going through any type of journey, stress management and self-care are key. We want to be in that parasympathetic rest and digest calm state and not in that sympathetic fight, flight, run state. So you have to write down a list of internal, external, physiological, psychological potential stressors. And I like the way I like to do it is ask yourself, what are things that are pouring into your life like a faucet? And what are things that are draining your life? Like the drain. And that can really help you with realizing, okay, what are things and situations and patterns that I do that could be a stress, that could be stressful to my life.
I love that. And, you know, there are a lot of signs I think that we can point to that your GI issues are more stress induced. The first one that comes to mind is when people tell me that they get bloated from just drinking water.
Yeah.
I'm mm-hmm. like, that is a huge red flag that there is a cortisol issue going on, and that's likely causing a lot of your GI issues. And then there's also just so many mechanisms. I know you already listed that before as to how stress negatively affects the GI tract. And something also that's really big that comes to mind is that people I find who are more stressed, right, and maybe are busier or more anxious, are eating faster. And they're not properly chewing their food. So their meal hygiene is poor. And that's also going to lead to more GI issues. And sometimes just working on that meal hygiene, right? It's not just what you eat, it's how you eat. Making sure that you're thoroughly chewing your food to applesauce consistency, that, you know, you're eating in a relaxed state, right? So maybe taking 10 deep breaths before you eat, that you're sitting down for meals, that you're not watching a stressful TV show or having a stressful conversation during your mealtime. Sometimes just those things alone can improve your symptoms.
I absolutely love that you mentioned those things, especially the hard conversations, the stressful conversations. having that stress can really hinder your digestion. And one thing that I really find too for people that have had a history or have food sensitivities is stressing about the food that they're consuming and how their body is going to react. You can manifest a gut reaction and a gut response just by saying, my body's not going to like this food. And I see it time and time again. People go out to eat and they're like, wow, like I'm having gluten. And they might just be scared of gluten. They might not actually have a food intolerance. And you can manifest a quote unquote gluten reaction just by telling yourself, oh my God, I'm going to have a reaction to this food. You will physically feel bloated because the body has those fight or flight mechanisms and will shunt the production of your digestive enzymes. And of course, will slow motility. So you can manifest a food reaction, you guys, definitely.
Absolutely. And I also always tell my clients that just because you reacted to a food before doesn't mean it'll happen again. Our gut is always changing. Our body is changing, especially as we're working together and we're doing gut healing. Ideally, you know, the sign of a good, healthy, robust GI system and overall wellness is the ability to tolerate more food, right? So that's another important kind of aspect along the way is being more open-minded and having a more positive outlook on the way that your body is going to react to different foods as you go through your journey.
And that brings me to a very important point here. When you are healing your gut, one thing that could really hold you back is too limited of a diet, not feeding your body with enough nutrients or diversity. You can have insufficiency dysbiosis. There's not just, you know, opportunistic overgrowth dysbiosis. There's also insufficiency, lack of beneficial gut bacteria. So if you are consuming a low FODMAP diet for a long period of time, if you're restricted to like 5 or 6 foods, that's not going to be good for your gut either. You need that diversity to feed your beneficial bacteria, Firmicutes, Bacteriides, Akkermansia, like all these different names of like, you know, long-winded names of these bacteria, but you need diversity in your gut. And if you don't have that diversity, then you don't produce enough short-chain fatty acids. And then that can lead to leaky gut, heightened intestinal permeability. And then you're going to have reactions because anything and everything is coming into your bloodstream and your body's like, what is going on? The fire alarm goes off. So not feeding yourself with enough food, under eating, which is a stressor, but under eating as well as not feeding your body with enough diversity can also shoot yourself in the foot with healing.
Absolutely. I mean, the number of patients that come to me on a low FODMAP diet that their GI doctor put them on indefinitely, it's really concerning. I also always say too that with eating a variety of foods, some people can find that to be a little overwhelming, especially just because the, you know, decision fatigue and having enough time to prepare the food and whatnot. And I always say this, you don't need to reinvent the wheel every single time you eat a meal. So you could have similar meal structures, but just vary up at least one or two like components per meal. So for example, let's say like you usually have a vegetable omelet with fruit for breakfast, right? You can vary up, use different greens different days, use different fruit different days. Maybe one day instead of doing, an egg with egg whites, you do an egg with some smoked salmon, right? Things like that, just to add a little bit of diversity into it, but still keeping a similar structure can help with that decision fatigue. But still make sure that you're getting different nutrients, and feeding a variety of beneficial bacteria.
I love that. I always give my clients like a little phytonutrient guide and lists of foods that they can use. And I say, have at least 2 different colors with your vegetables with each meal. And then every single time you go to the grocery store, pick a new fruit, pick a new vegetable. It's really not that hard. It's not that complicated.
Yeah. I go to the farmer's market. Go to the farmer's market, see what's in season. Yeah.
Right? I love me some in-season fruit. I know a lot of people, they're like, but I don't like XYZ. But have you been consuming it because it's out of season? Because if so, it probably tastes worse.
Absolutely. Yeah. Or just not preparing it in an interesting way, right? A lot of people think that vegetables have to be boring because they're used to just growing up with it steamed or just sauteed in oil with salt and pepper. But there are so many fun things you could do with vegetables that make them really enjoyable.
I completely agree. So, other things that can keep people from healing. What we got, Anya?
Let's see. I mean, the other thing that's kind of, I think, an overall theme here is that you haven't addressed that root cause, right? So, you know, maybe you're just micromanaging some of the symptoms. So, for example, reflux comes to mind. So maybe with reflux, you're micromanaging it by going on a reflux-friendly diet, avoiding, you know, esophageal irritants and lower esophageal sphincter weakener foods, so those trigger foods. You know, you're doing all the lifestyle things, but you're not really getting better because you haven't really spent time working with someone to identify what is actually causing that reflux to manifest. So again, maybe for example, you're getting better, but you're not sustaining that because when that underlying root cause is not addressed, it's going to continue to rear its ugly head and your symptoms are going to continue to come back.
Mm-hmm. I think too, when they go into the finding the root causes, they don't do enough testing sometimes, or they do too much testing. So please, whenever you're working with a practitioner, make sure that you're giving them all information, all data, all history. Maybe you were on Accutane in your past. Maybe you were on birth control in your past. Maybe there's a traumatic event like a car accident that you were in. Like if you don't tell your practitioner these things, there might be a root cause that could be missed. For example, a car accident, right? That can shunt that connection, that vagus nerve connection, especially on that C1, C2 at the top. If you had any whiplash, speaking to myself from recent, you know, accidents here, you can have major issues when it comes down to communication through your entire body with those nerves into your GI tract. And then, for example, Accutane. A lot of people don't think about this, but if you have high or low cortisol, you can have a manifestation in your gut symptoms. With high cortisol, you'll be in fight or flight. So that can keep you gassy, bloated, maybe having constipation or diarrhea. And then if you have low cortisol, then essentially you can't combat any type of infections until that cortisol comes up, because that's protective of your immune system. I like to think of cortisol kind of like the fence around your cells. So if you don't have that fence, then you can't combat all the toxins, the inflammation. You can't support your body and get rid of that infection until that is addressed. So just make sure that, for example, you guys, going back to Accutane, that can suppress your cortisol production, creating low cortisol. So just connecting the dots there. But just make sure that you're giving your provider all the information and you are not leaving anything on the table. Really give them an opportunity to figure out what is going on. I know time and time again, people come to me and they're like, okay, all I have is a GI map. That's all I can afford. And I'm like, can we just push for maybe the $120 to do a cortisol panel, just so we don't miss something that I think could be an additional issue?
Exactly. And I think on a similar note, I'd say that another key point is focusing solely on your GI symptoms. So oftentimes gut issues manifest extraintestinally. So they don't necessarily always manifest as GI symptoms. They can be things like acne or fatigue or brain fog or trouble sleeping, right? So assuming that just because you're not having GI issues that your gut is in a great place is not a good idea, because that's not always the case.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. Oh my gosh. Especially when it comes down to anxiety and brain fog, those top two things can be from gut issues. Anxiety, depression, brain fog, ADHD symptoms. I cannot give you the number of people that come to me saying I have a hard time concentrating and they think they just need a hap on Adderall, when in fact it could be a gut issue.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So we've talked a lot about things that could hold you back. Anything else that we missed, Anya? There's so many other things.
I know. There's so many other things, but I feel like we covered a lot. and a lot of these other topics, I think, just are so big and merit their own episodes to explore in more depth.
Right. I think one more thing that we missed would be, you know, certain supplements or medications that can impact your gut as well. So the top of my head, like with medications, we know, and sadly, this is just the case, antidepressants can cause major alterations in your bowel movements. We know that birth control can cause leaky gut, or for some people, constipation, GI pains. And of course, long-term use of antibiotics, we know that that will cause completely disruption in your gut microbiome, but things like that. And then PPIs will suppress your stomach acid, so that increases your risk of contracting other pathogens. Just a lot of different, you always have to check with medications and medication history, like I mentioned, Accutane. And then we have supplements that some people just like blindly take. Like if you take too much electrolytes, too much magnesium, you're most likely, like magnesium citrate or oxide, that's going to draw water into your intestines. You're going to have potentially loose stools, cramping, or diarrhea because it's drawing water into your intestines. So definitely supplements as well. And I can talk about more, but I'll open up for Anya to give a list of her supplements as well that can cause some GI issues.
Yeah, I mean, everything that you listed are the first ones that come to mind. Another thing is laxatives. It always breaks my heart when I'm working with a client and then later they confess that they've been taking laxative, especially long term, because that is going to impair your intestinal function and that is something that we're going to have to keep into account and that's going to make it harder to heal, especially if you've been doing, over the counter laxatives long term. So that's something that is really, really important to disclose right off the bat. And also to set the expectation that it might take a little bit longer if you've been relying on laxatives. And if you haven't started laxatives, or if you're right at beginning to start laxatives, I highly encourage you quit while you're ahead. Work with someone. There's so many other approaches that you can take that are much safer than starting down the laxative train because it's really hard to stop once you get on.
Yeah, and I also don't want people either to feel like, so there are some cases in which there might be structural adhesions, there might be pelvic floor dysfunctions, tortuous colon, redundant colon, surgery issues. You might need a long-term history of some shape or form of not maybe a laxative, but a prokinetic or a stool softener,
Exactly.
especially if you're
Yeah.
talking about, SIBO induced from food poisoning in which there's anti-vigilant antibodies and your gut motility might not work. So I agree with Anya, but at the same time, I don't want people to feel bad. If you're the person who has like the endotoxin related, chronic SIBO, you actually might need a chronic use of some shape or form of a motility agent. And don't feel bad for
Yeah.
that either.
Absolutely. And yeah, that's a good point. And again, there are different nuances, right? It's very
Right.
different to take like, a prescription prokinetic than it is to to drink smooth tea every
Every
single
day,
night.
and not
Yeah.
tell your practitioner about it.
Yeah. Very, very different.
This is fun. I love this. There's so many like different things, and I'm glad too at the beginning, like you mentioned expectations, because so many people can have such high expectations for healing when in fact you have to go in there trusting in your body's ability to heal on its own time. That's another thing that can hold people back is one, not trusting their body is going to heal, and then two, pressuring it to heal on your own timeline. The body's smart. It doesn't like stress. And if you're like focusing on like, hey, I need to heal in approximately 4 weeks because my wedding is happening, or I need to heal in approximately 4 weeks because there's this, big shoot I want to do, or I just want to heal quickly. You have to listen to your body. You have to believe in its ability to heal on its own time frame because that is
Yeah.
such a underlying stressor to yourself.
Yeah. And on a similar note, a washed pot doesn't boil. I think a huge part of healing is also not, overanalyzing every single second of your body and your symptoms on a constant basis, right? And always guessing what is going wrong and always having that sort of overlying health anxiety. I think a huge part of hiring someone is relieving yourself of that burden and letting someone else be your health detective and trusting that process along the way and doing your best to just try and focus on other aspects of your life while still implementing the suggestions and the diet and lifestyle changes that are conducive for your health.
Amen, girl. I love it. One last thing that we did not mention, but it is involved in cortisol, would be brain retraining, doing things like primal trust, DNRS, EMDR. Those would be for some severe complex cases. So there are some people that they have some limbic system dysfunction in which the body does truly get stuck in a flight or flight mode. And I do. Of course, Anya and I both questioned to figure out what cases could need this, but that's just one more thing that can hold people back. If your body is stuck in a specific fight or flight or dorsal vagal shutdown, that can prevent you from healing because the body is stuck in this kind of like stressed out or hypoarousal type of state.
Yeah, there's so many really amazing healing modalities in that area that we definitely, I know both of us employ with our clients that can be really effective. And again, not really something that you're going to hear about necessarily from TikTok or from your doctor, but are really, really life-changing for so many people.
No, TikTok's going to be like, take this supplement, do this little
Yeah.
dance. Struggles are all over.
Yeah.
Well, this was a fantastic episode, Anya. Thank you so much for being my epic co-host in this new Root Cause Radio.
Yeah, I'm so excited about this. I cannot wait for all the episodes to come, and I'm so happy to be talking with you here.
I know. I feel like you guys, like, we're a good match here. I tend to be a little bit of a a little aggressive, talk really fast, and you're like my yin to my yang.
Yes, we're very yin and yang in the best way.
In the best way. I love it. You guys, we're going to get things ready to rock and roll. But again, my Instagram is at faithandfit. And then Anya's is?
AnyaRosen.rd.
I love it. You guys, this is going to be so fun. This season is going to be epic. So we have things from candida, SIBO, parasites, hormonal birth control. Like, we have so many good topics that are coming. And I'm so excited for this to be a new season and a new groove for this podcast. And please make sure to review this podcast. We're going to be doing some giveaways. If you review it and you share it on social media, and those giveaways are going to potentially land you some awesome supplements or maybe free 15-minute consults. So just keep that in mind. And if anybody has any topics that you want to us to address, just DM us on Instagram, and then we are going to make a long laundry list of things that we can discuss.
Absolutely. We are all ears. So please, please, please reach out with what you want to hear about.
I love it. You guys, if you want me or Anya to help you at all, you can go to our Instagrams and go to our websites. And I'll also make sure to always have that information in the description of this podcast. So hope you guys all have a grand rest of your day. Your homework is to go listen to some shape or form of binaural beats or alpha waves to put your body into a parasympathetic state, preferably while you lay on the ground and let your dog lick your face. You're welcome. Okay, maybe not that, but like, just try it. Just lay on the ground. Just try it. So therapeutic. Anya, no comment. She's just like, no.
No. I'm just laughing. I'm giggling.
Okay, you guys enjoy the rest of your day, and then we will be connected shortly in the next episode.